Hello, welcome to another episode of Unpacking Neuroqueerness. I know it's been a long time since I've published an episode, as things have been pretty busy, just a lot of influx, a lot of different projects in flux at this moment. So, unfortunately, I haven't had much of a chance on coming on to record an episode of the podcast, but the podcast is still something that I plan to continue in the near future, and I do have also an exciting announcement. I won't share too much yet, but I am going to have a co-host starting next year in January. Now, this doesn't mean that there won't still be some episodes that I do on my own and kind of like this style, like I'm doing right now, which is how I started the podcast. And it's still, even though I do a lot of guest episodes now, I've been doing a lot of guest episodes for now year and a half, I would say, on a consistent basis, I've had a lot of guests. The very beginning of the podcast was more just me talking, and now it's kind of a mix. I would say it's a hybrid of some guest episodes, but still a lot of me talking about my experiences or general things related to autism, ADHD, or neurodiversity in general, and what neurodiversity really fully means and encompasses. And if you're curious about that, check out the previous episode, episode 170, because I go into a deep dive on what neurodiversity really means as a social, political, and identity, rather than a mere brain difference. A lot of people think of it only as a brain difference, but it's more than that, because it encompasses really a deviation from societal norms and constructs and molds of how we learn to do things in a typical way, how we learn to do our work, and how we learn to engage with society and it just interact and exist, and like basically down to every kind of thing about your lifestyle and your work and your relationships and your family and such. And it's so much deeper than just the brain, because and then people get it. Anyways, I explained this in that episode, but it's a term that gets misunderstood a lot, and I've even framed it in a way that doesn't really encompass it. Throughout this podcast, in the past, I've framed that term in a way that doesn't fully encompass the true core meaning of it. Having a brain that works differently, be that innate or acquired in neurodivergence, which is also a thing, so like trauma would be an acquired neurodivergence. That's not it. It's more of a deviation from these societal norms, because, of course, every brain is different, even for neurotypicals. What really tends to be very pronounced, the difference for individuals who identify as neurodivergent, it is that their style of working or their style of living or operating or just interacting with the world is divergent from the norms, cultural norms that are imposed out there. Anyways, that was a little more of a rant on that. But yeah, if you want to hear the full, and I guess I should remind myself, you know, like, some people will interpret it as a rant, but maybe for some people it'll be really helpful, so I try to remind myself, you know what? I know that a lot of people will benefit and, like, understand this, and so maybe it's, you know, it's just a process of being kinder with myself in terms of that. Yeah, today I wanted to talk about loops of anxiety, hyper-empathy, and how that can lead to a shutdown. And basically, I'm going to give a little personal story. So this is something that I experience a lot as an autistic person, and in the support groups I've been a part of recently with other autistic adults, I've noticed that a lot of people bring this up in their experiences too, is these really intense bouts of anxiety where it's like something happens. Like, for example, this weekend my cat was vomiting a little bit, and it turns out she's fine. Wasn't anything serious, but before I took her to the vet, at the time I didn't know, and I remember just being very concerned and having my brain go to very dark places, but this concern, it wasn't just like a manageable, like, I mean, it wasn't even like, in retrospect, the situation, like, her symptoms were not even as severe as they could have been, but I was so concerned, and it was that kind of concern that it's hard to describe, because most people don't experience it to that degree, where it is pretty much paralyzing. Like, you're so concerned and empathetic towards, like, this projection in your mind of, like, how much pain they're going through, which a lot of times can just be an overprojection because it's hard to really understand, although at the same time, it is important to note that cats are really good at hiding their pain, and so then that gets in, like, in my situation, like, that was getting into my head, and I was like, what if she's hiding in, and what if something really bad, what if it's something and then I start automatically blaming myself and thinking of the worst case, and like, oh, what if it's something I did, or like, because of her food, like, I didn't check, what if her food was bad, or what if I didn't smush it enough, and what if she vomited because of that, it's just all these things, and you feel like this intensity, that's why we call it a hyper-empathy, and that's why it's so unfair that autistic people get accused of not having, or just broad, like, painted with this broad brush of saying, of non-autistic people assuming that autistics don't have empathy, whereas in reality it's like, the empathy is so intense and it consumes you, and it causes a sort of a paralysis where you don't, it's just, you're feeling it so intensely that you can't even really, a lot of times you can't even move, you can't even, I mean, you can, like, move your arms, like, you can't really get, like, sit up or move around is what I mean. It's like you can't, and you can't, most of the times, a lot of times you can't speak in that moment because it's just so overwhelming. And so, like, you don't have some kind of response that society considers the so-called appropriate, expected empathy response, then you're judged as not having empathy. And I think, like, that is extremely unfair to all autistic individuals who actually, I mean, everyone is a little different, but there are a lot of autistic individuals, for those autistic individuals that experience, see, among, what I'm trying to say is amongst autistic individuals, each autistic individual is different. So, but with those individuals that are autistic that experience hyper-empathy, which there are quite a lot of, and I have personally interacted with many, including myself, It's really unfair to paint this broad brush of saying that we don't have empathy when we're actually feeling so much of it inside, more than other people might, because we're feeling it to a level that it's paralyzing, that we literally can't really, we don't know what to say or do. And then that gets interpreted as not caring, which is just really, when we're probably caring more than we need to. Like with my cat, she was fine. It was just a little sensitivity to her food, a little stress. Like she had this flea medication recently that might have been a reaction to that. But I was so worried. Like you could have thought she was having an emergency, because I was like, at times I was almost paralyzed. And the vet, like I couldn't, when I called the vet, they couldn't get me in. They couldn't get me an appointment for another 6 hours. And they were saying, you know, it doesn't sound like an emergency, but we can see her in 6 hours. And so I remember spending 6 hours that day. Parts of that 6 hours was just me sitting down, sort of paralyzed, just really worrying and just hoping that it wasn't anything like super serious. And then part of it was me walking around, pacing around the house, but I wasn't even able to get a lot of the things I wanted to get done that day, a lot of things I wanted to work on. I wasn't able to do any of that because I spent 6 hours in this state. So that's what I mean when I talk about autistic inertia and autistic hyperempathy and the anxiety that comes with that and the paralyzation. Because of course there are neurotypicals that have anxiety too, but the anxiety for autistic people is different than for someone that's neurotypical, or even for someone that may be neurodivergent in another way but not autistic. So, anyways, that's all I wanted to cover in this episode. I hope this made sense. I hope you were able to get something out of it. Thank you for listening. I'll keep you posted on the exciting new format of the podcast. There will be some, I mean, there's not too much that will change. I will say there's like there'll still be a lot of these kind of episodes, but there'll be a lot more co-episodes with my host who has been a co-host who has been a regular guest on this podcast already. So I'm looking forward to it. There's a lot to tell. But without further ado, thank you for listening, and I'll see you next time.